We have one mission at the program: develop better leaders and create more cohesive teams.
Let's go, man. It's a race.
Welcome to the Program Podcast. The Program is a team building and leadership development company that works with more than 160 collegiate and professional athletic teams and corporations throughout North America annually. And I'm Eric Kapitulik, the founder and CEO of it. The Program believes that individual talent affords us the opportunity to do well in life. Individuals and individual talent wins games. But great teams compete for championships on whatever our chosen battlefield may be. And great teams are comprised of great teammates and great leaders. Joining me today on the Program Podcast to help us become great teammates and leaders is Rand Pecknall, head coach, Quinnipiac Men's Ice Hockey, who just finished his 29th season, a season culminating in the school's first national championship. To date, Coach Pecknall has a career record of 615, 337, and 103, and currently ranks first among all active NCAA Division I coaches in career victories and ninth all time. He is one of only three coaches to reach the 600-win milestone while coaching at one school, joining legends Jack Parker from Boston University and Red Berenson at Michigan. This year's squad earned its third trip to the Frozen Four since 2013, joining a club of six schools to have done that. They advanced to their third title game in that span, joining Minnesota Duluth as the only team to reach three title games since 2013. Coach Pecknall earned the Tim Taylor Award, given to the ECAC Coach of the Year for the third consecutive time and fifth time overall in his career. He joins Mike Schaefer as the only coach to win five awards, with all coming since the 2012-13 campaign. He is a five-time Spencer Penrose Award finalist, given to the National Coach of the Year and the recipient of the award in 2016. His teams have won seven ECAC Hockey Cleary Cup regular season championships and were the 2016 ECAC Hockey Whitelaw Cup tournament championships team. His teams have competed in the NCAA tournament nine times since 2002. They have 20-win seasons, including five consecutive years with at least 20 wins. He has coached and developed 243 all-academic team selections, 59 all-league selections, 26 first-team picks, 20 all-rookie team picks, 8 Quinnipiac Cup MVPs, 8 league players of the year, 7 league rookies of the year, 13 All-Americans, 8 Hobie Baker Award finalists, 2 ECAC Hockey Scholar Athletes of the Year, 5 League Goaltenders of the Year, a Hobie Baker Award hat trick finalist, and a National Rookie of the Year. Coach earned an economics degree in 1990 from Connecticut College and added a master's degree in education in 1993. He is a native of Bedford, New Hampshire, and is married to his wife, Nikki, and they have sons, Tate and Rex, and daughters, Cecilia and Georgia. Coach, thank you so much for joining me and us today.
Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Coach, that's an impressive resume, to say the least. They always highlight, though, resumes always highlight our accomplishments. Throughout your storied career, what would you consider as your greatest defeat, and what did you learn from it?
Ooh, greatest defeat. You don't get asked that a lot. That's a good question. I've never thought of that. I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. I mean, we've lost two national championship games. It's just a beast to lose that game, to be so close. And I think you learn a lot from both of those. But I also, in both those scenarios, like, you know, I step back from it, and as much as it devastated you to lose those games, like it's climbing the mountain just to get there. Like we realistically probably with the talent we had or get access to from time to time, it's just hard to get there. We got there obviously this year too, and we won it. But so I would say maybe those two, but there's also a lot of positives. I try to always look at a spin, like the glass is half full, it's not half empty. I will say this year, you know, we had a great season. We won the regular season in our league, and we had the best record in like 35 years. Like we dominated our league, which is a really good league.
Right. Yeah. Right.
We had four teams in the top 16 in the tournament, but we lost to Colgate. We got upset by Colgate in the semifinals of our league for the playoff championship. And I really felt that loss, looking back on it, was the impetus for us winning the national championship. Like we needed to lose that game to ground out a little bit. We kept winning games in February. We weren't playing that great. We were like 8-0. We didn't lose a game. It was like, it's a mark of a good team, but the boys weren't listening to me as much or listening to the staff as much. And then after Colgate, boy, they locked it back in. They bought in, and you know, we went on a run and we won a national championship. So as much as, you know, I didn't want to lose to Colgate, looking back on it, that loss was the impetus for us to win a national championship.
Coach, when you lose a national championship and then you have the joy of winning one this year, afterwards, do you and your staff debrief the year's win or lose of, hey, what did we do well? What can we do better in the future?
Yes, we do a debrief every year. I don't use the term debrief. I know that's more of a Navy SEAL term.
Well, Marines. We like to say Marine Corps.
Oh, Marines. Okay,
fine.
Marines. Sorry,
but that's fine, Coach.
Marines, Navy SEAL. Anyway. Sorry,
that's fine. if I'm talking about your greatest defeats, you can talk about the SEALs.
That's your wheelhouse. I'm more of a hockey player. We do it every year as a coaching staff. We haven't done it yet. We will do it. It's been so hectic, but we sit down and I have my assistants come in, and I always lead off with, I do this. I like this. I don't know why I just like it, but it's like they come in with here's the three things, 1, 2, 3 that we do best. And these are the three things we need to get better at. And each coach goes, I usually go last. And then it's interesting because there's always things that correlate that we all agree on. There's always something that, I wouldn't put that one. I'd probably put that 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
So we start with that. And then we talk about, then we go through, I have like kind of an agenda, and then we go through everything. It's great. Sometimes there have been times it's been an 8-hour day. Like just the three of us in a room and we get lunch delivered. It's awesome. And I refer back to that. We usually always do it every May. And then I refer back to it in September when we get going again. All right, what did we want to change? What don't we want to change? Sometimes that's important too. But we do that every year. I think it's a really good way to hold yourself accountable as a coaching staff. And I think you have to do it on a regular basis. I mean, I do it. I self-evaluate all the time. Like, what did I do right? What did I do wrong this weekend? And stuff like that. I mean, I think that's how you get better as a coach and as a leader.
Right. Yeah. Do you do the same process with your players?
Yes. So every year we do exit meetings, end of the year meeting. Actually, I don't call them end of the year meetings because a lot of them are coming. If I'm doing one, they're coming back. They're not exiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do the same thing with that. They'll come in. I'll be like, give me, what are the three things you're best at? Prioritize them. Sometimes four if they want. And then what do you need to get better at? And so I love that. Because that's the first thing we talk about, because that allows me to understand if they're being accountable. Because we've had them for a whole year, like, or 2 years or 3 years sometimes, right? I've coached these kids for a while. So if there's a disconnect, like if I think, hey, these are the three things and they've got three completely different things, there's a disconnect because I have told them for sure those three things I think they need to get better at. So I think it's a good exercise in accountability. And most of the time, our guys nail it. But once in a while, they're a little bit off. And then that allows me to realize, okay, this player is disconnected. He's not listening to the coaches. So we need to try a different way to get through to him.
Coach, when you're recruiting players into your organization, I mean, we get asked all the time, hey, if somebody is undisciplined, as an example, can you make them more disciplined? And our response is always, yes, if you've got the right culture, the right leaders, the right teammates on that team, that person come into that environment and become more disciplined. With that said, I'd rather, if discipline is important to you, which at the program it is, if discipline or whatever the value may be, the our core value may be, I'd really rather just recruit it. So they show up here that way, and then we can develop it even further, right? When you're recruiting players to your program, what are certain things that you look at? Or do you have core values that define your culture set? Is it more just because you and your staff have been together for a while? You just kind of, you know it when you see it? What is it, Coach?
We definitely put a huge emphasis on elite character, high character, student athletes. Are we perfect? No. Do we make mistakes once in a while? Yes. Mm-hmm. But we want high character, like crazy character. This kid is off the charts from a character perspective. Selfless, great teammates. So we want as many of them as we can get. But it's hard to find 25 guys like that. A lot of times we'll find, kids with good character, and then they come in and they're embedded in our culture and they rise up to become an elite character person. We talk a lot about selfless and doing things for the betterment of the team. It's a lot easier to get a high character kid or an elite character kid to be selfless than it is a low character kid. Do I think you can improve character a little bit? Yeah, I think you can improve it a little bit. I mean, part of it is the maturation process, right? If you're going to grab a kid at 19 years old, he might be a good kid. He's just immature, and sometimes it's just, they have to mature into that and realize, hey, this is not how you're supposed to do things. And our players, our older players are a big part of that. They really push the envelope with keeping guys in line. Hey, that's not how we do things. We have tremendous leaders. I think a lot with captains and assistant captains, like your leadership group, it's very easy for them to kind of look the other way if a freshman's doing something wrong. It's very easy. Is that really a big deal? I'm a big advocate of the broken window theory. Little things always mean something. And that's a big thing I have to get on my captains about. Don't let little things go, because once you let little things go, then big things happen. You have to stay on the details early, because when you get in a national championship game and you're down 2-0 to Minnesota, a team that should beat you, we had no panic in our game. And a lot of that's because we worked on the details all through the year. And we talked a lot about attacking adversity and how to handle adversity and not panicking in adverse situations. So, but anyway, going back to your question, the two things that we want the most are high character and high hockey IQ, kids that really think the game. That's what does well at Quinnipiac. That's why we win.
Yeah. The your point about the details. I had a operations officer. I remember I was 22 years old, just finished the Naval Academy and college lacrosse, and it's less than a year later, and I'm an infantry platoon commander in charge of a 36-man infantry platoon, right? And the battalion operations officer was from Connecticut. He saw that I was from Connecticut, so we shared that common experience. We came up, introduced himself one day, and we were talking. And he ended up really being a mentor of mine. But anyway, one of the things he said that first time I met him, and I'll never forget it, was he said, "Lieutenant Kapitulik, if ever there is a senior officer who tells you he's a big picture kind of guy, move very far away from him when the bullets start flying. Our job is to take care of the little things, because the little things take care of the big things."
Yep, agree. That's a great call. Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Right.
You're in a different line of work too there than winning or losing a hockey game. We're talking about lives, about people.
Yeah, but that's the thing, Coach, right? And that's why we have not only on our podcast, but that we work with college and pro teams, we work with corporations and stuff. And sure, the battlefield may be different, literally or figuratively, but boy, there's some universal truths in what makes a great teammate, what makes a great leader, and what makes a world-class team. So it's always interesting, though, hearing you say it, because it is a different battlefield, right? But that's a universal truth, I think. What do the defeats in the national championship games, do they hurt more than it feels good to win a national championship? Or does the winning of the national championship feel better than the hurt you have from losing one?
I mean, no, there's definitely devastation. Like, you're devastated, your players are devastated, the coach, everybody's devastated, your fans, like, it's hard to lose. But to win one is like, you can't even put a value on it. it's exponential. So,
right.
You know, I would lose 10 to just to get one to win, you know, or whatever it takes. Yeah. It's crazy. Just the feeling. I still hasn't really completely soaked in to do it. I think a little bit too, of how we had to do it, you know, having to, you know, we got, you know, we're Quinnipiac. We're not one of the big boys.
Right.
You know, we got to beat Ohio State. Then we got to beat Michigan, who probably had top five talented team ever in the history of college hockey. And then we got to beat Minnesota, which is definitely top five most talented team ever. Like, we had to beat two just create like talent off the charts, right, the last two games to win that. So I think the way we did it, we're down 2-0. We score late to go to overtime. Then we went overtime. I think that made it even bigger, you know, but in the end, just an awesome experience for myself, our staff and our players and our, and really Bobcat Nation.
Coach, throughout your career, is there something now, you talked a little bit about doing debriefs, that's my term or our term, at the end of every year. You've had a long career. When you look back at yourself 29 years ago to where you are now, are there certain things that you've, that you're just a different coach about, or what are the areas that you felt like you came in to coaching and have had to improve or have improved upon the most to get to where you are now that have the greatest positive impact on you, your staff and team? Anything special?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I'm absolutely a better coach now than I was 29 years ago. I mean, I think when you're young, you don't, I know what I'm doing. And then, you know, then what I learned, I matured and realized, like, God, I got so much to learn. And that's probably one of my strengths. I have this thirst for knowledge. Like, I want to learn more. I want to get better. I mean, 2016 season was only 7 years ago. And we lost four games that year out of 42 or 40. Like, it's great. Like, there's like five times in the last 30 years where a team have had four losses or less, and we've done it twice. It just doesn't happen. Like, we had this amazing year. So that was only 7 years ago. Like, I think I'm a much better coach now than I was then. Like, I've learned a lot. I've adapted. And I think that's one of my strengths, is I'm always trying to get better. Like we just had this, we were 34-4-3 this year. We had a national champion. I'm already like, all right, what are we going to tweak next year? What are we going to fix? Do we need to change anything? You know, we will get to that as a staff, and maybe we don't come up with much, but I always am trying to think about things that we want to get better at. One of the things, I didn't do this yet, but I will meet with a bunch of my guys that are moving on, and whether it's a phone call or whether I take them to lunch or whatever, I always like to ask their opinion, because now they're out. They don't play for me anymore. And I'm like, hey, what do we do well as a coaching staff? What do we do well as a team? What do you love that we do? And they'll give me that feedback. So we keep doing that. And then, you know, what didn't you like? Is there something we can get better at? Because when they play for you, they're always a little skittish on giving you everything. Like, right, when they're out, it's even better. I prefer to wait till they're out a year or two, maybe even sometimes 3 years. And then I grab them. Hey, let's go back to when you played, especially if they go play pro. You know, now you've played pro for 4 or 5 years. You're in the NHL. What did you love that we did? What do we do better than NHL teams? And what can we get better at? I think anytime you can get feedback, gives you the ability to adapt and be better.
Yeah. Coach, if that being the case, then if, when you think about yourself and about, hey, this is what I do well as a head coach, what would you say are those things that make you the head coach that you are?
I don't think there's any one thing. I think there's a few things. I think one is just with my assistants. I've always had good assistants. Like, I think I hire well, and then I think I develop those guys. And I also think, I get out of their way. and I let them do their jobs. I still, if I need to, I will step in and be like, no, this is, we're not doing it there. But you can't do everything yourself. You just can't. I tried it that when I was young. You can't, you have to have great assistance. You have to trust those people, give them a job, let them do it, let them be good at it. If they're not good at it, teach them, push them to be better at it. So I think that's one of my strengths. I think we also try to communicate with our players as much as possible. Are we perfect? No, but we try to be. We try to have really good communication. Like if a kid's not playing on a Friday night, like I want him, you can come talk to me. That kid should know why he's not playing. If he's not, a little bit's on him because we probably told him, and hey, you need to get better at this, or this is what you need to do. We do sometimes like mid-year debriefs. If a kid's not doing, hey, this is why you're not playing, like try to have good communication with the guys. And then probably the last thing is just what I've evolved into is really good at creating culture. I think we have this amazing culture. It's crazy how good our culture is. And there's so many things. People are always like, why is your culture so good? I was literally talking to one of the best golf pros in the world a couple of weeks ago, just randomly bumped into him in a hockey rink. And he's like, how do you beat Minnesota? And I'm like, it's not one answer. It's not one thing, right? It's not, culture is so many things that come into play, but I do think we are very focused on making sure our culture is good, making sure our leaders are doing what they need to do, make sure we recruit the right kids for our culture. If the kid's not right, well, let's get him in line. Let's get him on board. Cause sometimes guys will be on board. They might not be a leader, but they can still row the boat with us. You know, they can get on board. And there's so many little things. And I think with that culture, probably a key thing that we do well as a staff is positivity. If you go back 25, 30 years, I did it too. Everything was negative. Everything's like, you did this wrong. You did this wrong. So like, you know, we lose to Colgate in the semifinals of our league, which we shouldn't have lost. We did. We didn't come in on Monday and hammer them with 25 bad clips. We just went back to, this is what we need to do to win. And if we did find clips from that game, we showed them, or we showed clips from earlier games. This is our identity. This is how we win. We did an identity video before every single NCAA tournament game. We don't do it all year long, but I thought it was great. Everything was positive, and that creates this great culture. Guys come in the room, they feel safe. They love coming to the rink. They love coming to the video sessions. If you ask, you know, a lot of Division I athletes, I don't care, pick your sport, especially football, right? They walk in the room like, oh my God, you know, Monday film was brutal. You're getting roasted, right? You're walking in like you're sweating. You're like, oh, I'm going to get roasted. And then it kills your confidence. So, you know, again, I don't know what year it was, but I decided we go away from that. Do we show, you know, teaching clips once in a while? Yeah, but not often. It's mostly about, this is what we do well. This is what we do well. And let's stay on that course.
Yeah. One of the things we always highlight to coaches and business leaders is positive communication. And what does that mean? And I think a lot of people, when they hear that positive communication, they think of cheerleader, right? Like, hey, great job out there, right? It's, hey, you guys are wonderful, right?
I'm not doing that. I'm not that. No, that's not me. No.
And what we highlight is, and it's what you're talking about, is no, what positive communication is tell people what you want them to do. Tell them who you want them to be, not just what you don't want them to be. And that it comes back to, well, why is that? Well, if you tell somebody, don't think about the pink elephant. Yeah, you know what we all think about is the pink elephant, right? Don't do it this way. You know, well, that's what we're thinking about now. Where if we say positive communication, tell people what you want them to do or who you want them to be, not what you don't. We have this mental imprint as to what we're supposed to do, and it's right. Incredibly powerful.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. You talked about coach, and I think this is important because, you know, when you have you recruit a uber talented player, to what you're saying, super high character, selfless, team first guy, right? All of those things. We all want them, and we're all trying to recruit them, whether it's on the athletic field or in whatever the corporation may be, in industry. But then, look, I don't care who you are, you don't really know what you're getting until that person comes through the door. We can do our best. We try our very best to do so. But then that person comes through the door. And sometimes we miss. Or even if it's not a complete whiff, they're not all that we thought they were going to be from a character perspective. And you talked about, hey, we develop those people. Are there certain things, specific examples that you can give as to how you or how your staff or how your team captains, how you as an organization take those people and help develop them? Any specifics?
I mean, there's so many different things. You know, one thing that jumps to mind right away when you ask me that is what we did in, it was 2015, and we brought you guys in. We brought the program in because we were worried.
A good answer, Coach, by the way.
Great answer.
Yeah, stay with that.
but we did. And like, we still feel some of the effects. All those players that did that in 2015 with you when you guys came to us are all gone. They're some are in the NHL. Multiple guys are in the NHL. Soren Johnson was our captain, and I can tell that story in a second. He's now he's a doctor, he's a brain surgeon. But we were really worried about our leadership group because we had lost so many leaders and we didn't have anybody, you know, people had told me about the program. So we brought you in. And what emerged out of that 2-day event was awesome. And Soren Johnson was a good kid, great kid, like elite, mm-hmm. elite person. One of the best people I've ever met in my life. And he was just kind of a fourth line guy, didn't play a lot. And we did the whole, and I won't spoil it for everyone, but we did it. It was 2 days.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thought who I thought our leaders would emerge out of that. And it wasn't who I thought it was going to be. It was Soren. And as much as I like Soren, he hadn't shown those qualities. Actually, it might've been 2014. Sorry. It was probably 2014 because he was a sophomore. Then he was a junior and then he became our captain as a senior. But what I saw from him that day, and I let our players vote for our captains, what our players saw that day from him is why he was voted captain his senior year. And then that was the year we were number one in the country for most of the year. And we still feel the effects of Soren and that season in our culture. It's like, it's perpetual our culture, even though players come in and revolve. Yeah. Our older guys are still around a lot and they come back and they talk about things and they help guys get jobs. But
right.
Soren emerged from that. So you talk about what we do, like we do things like that. You know, we mm-hmm. hire an outside company to come in. You guys absolutely killed it. It was awesome. We had you come in a second time later. We did some different things that year. Right. But I think there's so many different things how you can do to create culture and cultivate culture and also like maybe squash it if it's going the wrong way. You know, I've had to do that sometimes with, you know, like I felt like our 2017-18 season. I don't want to get in all the details, but we did not. That was our only losing season in 25 years of D1. And our culture was not on display this year. We lost a lot of our leaders and some of our guys weren't doing what they needed to do. So we did have to kind of restore it, which we've done. Obviously, we just want a natty, but we've had since that year, we've had multiple years back in the NCAA tournament. But I think it's something as a leader, you need to have your pulse on at all times. It's not just with my coaching staff. It's, you know, it's my strength coach. It's my athletic trainer. It's our equipment. You know, it's everybody's involved. And having a great culture. And then obviously your players are the biggest part of it. But with your players, like you're not with them 24/7. You have them at the rink, you know, you have them for a certain time every day, but you're not around all the time. You got to make sure, you know, those leaders are leading in the right direction because leaders can take you in the wrong direction a lot. That can happen a lot.
That's right.
So, you know, college kids, they get in a lot of different social situations. And, you know, we talk about that a lot. It's not overkill, but we definitely talk about it a few times a year. Like, hey, you know, protect your teammates if they're in a bad situation socially, like, you know, this with the social media these days, like that can follow you around for 30 years if you do something stupid. So protect your teammates. And we talk about that a lot. And I think they do a good job of that.
Coach, in my own life, personally, I got married later in life and hence we had children later in life. And, but I have an 11-year-old son who plays sports and we have a 6-year-old daughter who's just now getting into it. But as I highlighted to our listeners in your bio, in the introduction, you're a father and a husband. And for me, becoming a father in coaching my own son has, it's made me a better coach, having children and being a father. Can you talk about your family and the impact that it has had on you coaching? Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, because you see them, you see your children when they go play for other coaches. You see so many things that are really done well, and you're like, wow, that guy's good. That's a good coach, you know. Mm-hmm. And you see our circumstances where you're like, ah, God, what is he doing? You know, like, what are you thinking? Like I've seen it a lot more with my 17-year-old, because whether it's hockey or baseball going through. We got really lucky. Marty St. Louis, who's a Hall of Fame hockey player, got traded to New York Rangers, and so he moved there, and his son, he had a son the same age as mine. And so he came in to coach my son. And I don't say I got lucky in him. I mean, obviously he's now the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. So he went right from coaching, you know, youth hockey to the head coach in the NHL, which doesn't happen ever probably. But as smart as Marty was as a hockey coach, that was nice to have. He was a great person. Like, he's just a great person, and he cared about the kids, and he did things the right way. And my son was on an elite hockey program, Mid Fairfield, which is one of the best programs in the United States for hockey. So always top five, almost eight, every age group. And we were no different. We were always one, two, or three. But the great thing that Marty always did, like, he didn't coach to win. He wanted to win, but he didn't coach to win. And he would always make sure he was coaching development wise. And what I see over and over again with my other kids, because all four play different sports. My girls are in field hockey and soccer. My younger son's in hockey and is baseball too. And I just see it over and over again, a lot of times, more in the hockey world, that coaches are coaching to win at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And that's wrong. It's not the way to coach. Like, you can want to win, and that can be one of your objectives, but you should be coaching from a developmental standpoint. Nobody's going to care how many games you won at 9 years old. You know, you're teaching them life lessons. You're teaching them how to deal with adversity. And you're setting them up to hopefully maybe, you know, and again, you're not setting up to be an NHL hockey player or a pro baseball player. Maybe they can play in college and have that experience, whether it's Division I, II, or III. But I saw it a lot, and I always tell this story about Marty. We went, one year was it was in January, and my team had a bye weekend. We didn't play that weekend, which is random. And my wife's like, you're going to Toronto with Tate for hockey. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, all right, I can do some recruiting around it, whatever, I'll go. So I always jump on the bench. I don't say a lot. I just work the door. I got Marty, I got a Hall of Famer there. So, but I'm there, you know, I'm like Mr. Positive. Great shift. Everything's great, you know.
Yeah.
Parents love to have me there, whatever. But I went, and it was 12 years old, and we were top five team, and we played another team. I won't mention the team, because I don't want to disparage that program or that coach, but they were also top five in the country. And we played them, and the whole game, the other coach of the other team was playing dump and chase hockey, which is how you're going to win at 12 years old, right? You don't turn the puck over. And I'm just cringing. I'm like, let the kids make plays. Like, once in a while, yeah, you got to dump. It's a time for a change. But it was just dump, you know, like it was. And they did it the whole game. And Marty didn't believe in that. Like, he wanted guys to make plays. He wanted to develop hockey players. And he didn't say it once. Like, I don't think we dumped the puck the whole game. There was times we should have dumped it. We didn't dump it. And the kid would come back, he'd turn it over, and they'd go down on a breakaway. He'd be like, you know what? I like the idea, but this is probably what you could have done different. He was so positive. It was awesome. I always remember that. And you know what? We lost that hockey game. Nobody cares about it. Nobody remembers it. I remember it. But I'll tell you now that with that birth year, I always check this. We have, from that birth year, we have 9 kids committed Division I right now. I think we'll get to 10 or 11, because these kids play a little bit. They'll play a little bit further as they get into junior hockey and stuff. We might get to 12, which is a crazy number for a youth hockey team. It's crazy. The Mid-Fairfield team is loaded, and most years they have 5 or 6. If you have 5 or 6, that's an awesome development if you take those kids all the way through. So he could get to 10, 11, or 12. That team, and I'm not going to name the name, I check it every now and again. They've got 2 right now. So they beat us in that 12-year-old, and they're a great program. They have 2, we have 9, and climbing. They have 2, might get to 3 or 4. Like, who did the better job? You know what I mean? Does it really matter to win a game at 12? Now, you want to win, I get it. You don't want to go and go 2-55, because then the kids are miserable and they're going to quit the sport. You can't have that either. But I always look at that. And so, you know, and I learned from that. I learned from our and other coaches that I have of my kids' teams. I'm like, wow, that's a great coach. And I'm also like, oh my God, what is that person doing? Like, it's just, it's bad. It's just, and you see it a lot. So I think we always can learn, we always can adapt, but I can learn from 10-year-old field hockey or 12-year-old field hockey or lacrosse or whatever, pick your sport. You can always learn and learn how to treat people and how to run your program.
Coach, that's an unreal story. That's awesome. I coach.
I should have told it on a USA Hockey. I'm going to tell the USA Hockey people to clip that and then post it out.
Dump and chase. I'm going to use that tonight in our lacrosse game. I'm going to talk to the team about it afterwards. The way I say it as a youth coach is, I ask the team, is winning important? We ask this first practice of every season, is winning important? And I think a lot of kids, you know, they've been programmed by either teachers or parents about winning's not important. It's how you play the game. And I quickly want to highlight to our players that winning is important. It is important. In most lines of work, if you don't win enough, you're getting fired. Okay. Yes. So, yep. So you got to perform, right? I mean, winning matters. It does, but we're just not going to stay focused on winning. It matters. Let's agree that it matters, but winning ends up being a byproduct of us doing things the right way. Sure. And what does the right way mean? The right way means you show up at practice, you give 100% when you're here, and you share positive energy while doing it. And if we do those things every single day, you as an individual, we as a team are going to get better. And as long as we continue to get better, winning will end up being a byproduct of it. Boy, we play teams, Coach, you know, the lacrosse equivalent or the football equivalent, I coach him in football too, of dump and chase. Or another one is kids are 9, 10, 11 years old, and coaches, you know who the good kids are and who the kids are who aren't. And the kids who aren't so good at 8, 9, 10, 11, there's coaches who just don't play them or play them for the absolute bare minimum that they can play them. Right. And in fact, in one football game, I had going through the shake line at the end of the game, I talked to the coach and said, hey, I just want to talk to you. I just want to tell you, I feel sorry for you. You had kids on your team who you didn't play today to beat us. Like, okay, great, you beat us today. But I feel badly for you because this game, winning this flag football game, means so much in your life that you're not going to play a quarter of your team. That's just sad.
Yeah, and those kids that didn't play are probably going to quit the sport. You know, they're probably moving on something else. So
that's
all,
right.
And it's all what you want to get out of it. And you can't, that's probably the problem with youth sports right now. It's so focused on winning. And I agree with you, winning is important. Like you need to know these are things in life. Like that's what athletics teaches young boys and girls, is how the world works, right? How to be a great teammate, how to win, how to overcome adversity. Probably overcoming adversity is one of the greatest things. You know, how am I going to get better? But when you don't play those kids, you know, then it's not helping them. I get it. It's not about nobody. I don't remember how many games I won at 9 years old. I don't remember any of that stuff. You know, you don't remember those things. But it's interesting with youth sports right now, because it's a little crazy. It's a little out of control.
Yeah, I think a couple of things, right? First, being in youth sports, we actually don't say that sports teach great life lessons. We've stopped saying that. And what we always highlight is sports do not teach great life lessons. Great parents and coaches do through sports. Right. Because we've got a lot of bad life lessons being taught through sports. We have as many bad life lessons. We have so many dump and chase stories that we can draw from in sports that it's not sports. It's great parents and great coaches. You know, another thing, coaches, and you mentioned it earlier when you talked about your own program. kids come off the field and parents are, oh my God, that is an unbelievable touchdown you scored. Okay, if that's the only thing you're going to talk to your kid about, I'm going to tell you what your kid knows that you value, scoring touchdowns. What we always highlight is, hey, as coaches, we want to recognize that, but performance and recognition of great performance is kind of systemic in sports. Instead, make a concerted effort to recognize the behaviors you're looking for, the character, the high character plays, the selfless plays, the on and off the ice. Do you do that, coach? How do you do it?
We always try to accentuate any positives, right? So your players are driven for individual success and team success. And the kids that have all the goals and all the assists and points, like that's easy, right? They're feeling good about them. I'm going to be an All-American. I'm going to be an All-Star. That's good. But how do you get them to understand, like, it's important that we, you know, we block a shot, that we back check, that we defend. Like, there's no stats for those usually. Well, I guess shot blocks is a little bit, but I always use the one about screening the goalie. Like, you don't usually, the kid who screens the goalie doesn't get a point. But that's why the goal went in, right? You see it at the NHL all the time. Like, it's a huge, huge positive, huge strength. But there's no statistic that, you know, that you screen the goalie, right? And then the other two guys and the goalie, they're great. But so that's something that I use an example about how we teach being selfless. Like, we always make sure every Monday, that's the first thing we show, or the second. It's early in the clips, the review. I use this all the time. This kid Joey Cipollone on our team this year, I use the phrase net anchor. He was our best net anchor we had. Like, he was awesome at it. And we scored so many goals this year. And if you look up his stats, he doesn't have a lot of points this year, but he had probably like 8 goals that the goalie can't see the puck. It's his goal. You know what I mean? It's his goal. And it's important to positively reinforce. And then other guys are trying to do it. He was terrible at it when he got to me, and he got better at it. There's so many things. He's a great example of him coming in. He had bad details, but he was such an awesome kid. He just worked at his game. And bought into our identity and became a really, really effective player. You know, was he our best player? No, but boy, was he effective and a big reason why we won a national championship. And we had a lot of guys like that. We had guys like that that didn't play a lot or didn't play at all. Noah Alvin was our third string. I think he played 2 minutes this year. To me, Noah, he was a rock star of a kid in our locker room. He handled his role well. And he's a big reason why we won a national championship. People look at me and go, he played 2 minutes the entire season. Like, he's important to our culture and our success. He's a glue guy in our locker room, and you need to have, everybody's important. Once you accept that as a coach, as a leader, you're going to have a lot more success.
The two things. First, the guy who screens the goalie. It doesn't come up in the stats.
No.
But every single player on his team knows it, though. Like, yes. And they know the guy who kind of bails out when the shot is coming too, right? You can't BS that, right? Coach, talking about your player, maybe he played 2 minutes of ice time, right, in a game, and something tells me that 2 minutes was in a blowout, probably. Yeah. I don't know for sure, but something tells me if he only played 2 minutes, it probably was in a blowout. But as you said, he was as vital to our national championship as anybody. When guys aren't getting playing time, or think about a corporation where, okay, you've got your C-suite executives, but you got the guy in the mailroom too.
Yeah.
How do you as a leader make those players, the 2 minutes all season long players, what do you do to make sure that they know their role, understand their importance, and show your appreciation for them? Or anything specific?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways. I mean, I think the role is just communication, you know, and have good communication with him, whether it's me as a head or my assistants, like, this is what we expect out of you. This is what where we think you're going to be. I always make sure to let them know, hey, you can change your role. You can change your fate. Like, you might be on the fourth line now. I've had plenty of guys. I use Zach Metz, who's my captain this year. Like, he was our eighth defenseman. He got healthy, scratched a bunch as a freshman, barely played. and he's a three-time All-American. You know, he went like this. So I can give you a Brogan Rafferty was a walk-on for us. He's played in the NHL. Bryce Van Braven, you know, was a 12th forward for us, and he played in the NHL. Like, I always want to make sure they know they can change their role, and they don't have to be ecstatic with their role, but this is their role. And when they come to the rink, that's what you're supposed to do. And why don't you make sure you're working to get more ice time, to improve your role. And I think it's important to communicate with them that they are valuable to the team in the role they're in, but hey, I want them to strive to be better. And that's why we get better. You know, we had, I might be off in the numbers, but Jacob Quillen, who scored the overtime goal for us in the national championship game, he had close to 40 points. He got offered an NHL contract this year. He's going to come back for another year for us, but he was undrafted. He could have got drafted 3 years in a row. No NHL team drafted him. We get him. He didn't play a lot as a freshman. He got scratched a few times. I don't remember his point total. I'm going to say 6, 7, 8 points. I might be off on that by a point or two. And then this year he has 40 something. He's a superstar and most outstanding player in the Frozen Four. And, you know, like he just kind of shot up. And, you know, the thing with Q, his whole freshman year, I got on him and got on him and our assistants got on him in a positive way. Like, hey, you can be better. Like, you need to work on your offensive play. You got to work on your goal scoring, on your shooting, getting your release off quicker. He worked on those things in practice. He worked on them in the summer. He worked on them this year and got put in a different role. We actually had an injury early in the year and he kind of got bumped into a better line and he took the ball and he ran with it and I give him credit for it, but we do that all the time. And I think that's a lot about communication and, you know, people have to understand their role and be good at it. But you also want them to strive to get out of that role and be better and to get more. And that is a fine line because they have to still be selfless while they're in that role. So there's a fine line on that. It's a lot easier to deal with that. A kid, like I mentioned, Jacob Quillen, like he is an A+ character kid. He'll be one of our captains next year. And it's a lot easier for, you know, a high character kid to handle that. Obviously a low character kid is going to pout and whine and, you know, moan about it. And he's probably not going to get where he needs to be in life or in that situation.
Yeah. And probably enter the transfer portal.
Yeah. Probably.
So, yeah. And for our audience, by the way, a healthy scratch that coach mentioned earlier is, in hockey, you have people at home games who don't suit up. You're only allowed a certain number of players on the bench. And if you're not one of those players that's suited up on the bench, you're a healthy scratch. So you're on the team at a home game dressed in street clothes, but still a member of a team. And so to be a healthy scratch and still be a team guy, that's a high character person.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what we thrive on. We have to have that if we're going to beat the big boys.
Yeah. Coach, I know that I'm keeping you from Coach and I talked about right before we started recording today. I'm keeping Coach from power washing his back deck, which makes me chuckle anyway, that the national championship winning head coach is going to be out power washing his back deck this afternoon.
It needs it. That, Eric. It really does. It's only a once a year job, but it's going to happen today.
I'm going to let you go, but I want to ask two final questions for you. First, I had a mentor of mine once say, I said, I'd like to ask your advice about something. And he said, advice is from people who have never done it. I give counsel. So I'd like to ask you for your counsel for whether it's a young coach, an old coach, or a business leader out there. What is your counsel to them of, this is something I've learned along the way. Yeah. Do this.
Yeah, the first thing I would say, just what I do with my team a lot, not just this year, but in recent years, but we talk all the time as a staff about attack adversity. It's because it comes all the time in every shape, form. It can be on the rink. It can be in the weight room. It can be in your personal life. The shuttle's late to get you to practice. Like it's just how life works, right? There's always, I used to feel like it never ends. Like something's always happening that throws you off or whatever. you know, I find myself at times when I'm dealing with adversity in just in life in general, it's easy to be like, oh God, why, you know, why is there traffic today? Why is what? All right, well, listen, it doesn't help to have that woe is me type attitude. It doesn't. And if I get drifted, I'm like, all right, wait a second, just stop. We're going to attack the day. I got to be positive. The glass is half full. It's not half empty. I know it's a simple thing to say, but I got to give myself pep talk sometimes and be like, okay, let's attack. Just like I tell my players, let's attack it. Let's handle this. And I just think you're going to have so much more success in life. And I think if as a leader, as a coach, I'm talking to coaches maybe more. We talk a lot about that as a team, attack adversity, because it happens every single game, multiple times in a game, right? You take a penalty, a puck goes in off a guy's skate. You're like, oh my God, how are we down two? Like, we're in the national championship. We're down 2-0 to Minnesota. They got all these first and second rounders and superstars and whatever. And, you know, guys are going to make $100 million playing in the NHL. We're down 2. And you know what? There was no panic on my bench, not a drop. It was awesome. You know, listen, was I concerned? I was like, yeah, okay, well, we're coming. We were playing well. And we got better and better as the game went on. But we were so used to attacking adversity and expecting adversity to come into our lives, into our hockey games, that we just were like, okay, how are we going to handle this? And we were great in the second, and then we were ridiculously good in the third. I was shooting them 16-2. What an awesome team they had. And the ice was like tilted. And we just attacked. And we had to pull the goalie in the third. We score, we went in overtime, but there was just no panic at all. And even going in overtime, like I've never been more confident in winning a game in my life. Like I walked in the room, the guys were like, this is awesome. We're going to do it. And we did it, you know? And again, I think a lot of that was lessons that we learned during the year and talking about, embracing the grind instead of like panicking about the grind. The grind's going to happen. Life is a grind. It's not easy. And if you embrace it and attack it, I think you're going to have a lot more success in life.
That's great, Coach. I talked just yesterday about having this conversation about COVID, right? And I want to be clear that I know there's numerous people who lost a loved one in COVID, lost their job, right? Their livelihood. And I want to be empathetic, to say the least, to those individuals. But that wasn't the case for Team Kapitulik. That wasn't the case at the program. And COVID, early on, we decided, okay, let's just have the frame of mind that this, like any adversity, like any challenge in our life, there lies an opportunity. So let's have the framework, as you're talking about, glass half full. Let's look at this. Let's look at COVID as an opportunity. And having that mindset is key. But I think you just mentioned it, but it can't just be a mindset of, okay, this is an opportunity. You've then got to go and do something to make it an opportunity, right? And whatever that adversity, it doesn't have to be COVID. It can be generated adversity in a practice or in business, whatever it might be. But adversity is an opportunity, right? And you brought up a point, and we talk about it all the time, which is, and I think you mentioned social media earlier in our conversation. I think it's a real challenge for us with social media, because I believe social media, and then fueled by maybe poor parenting, is I think, developing a victim's mindset in our society, where we blame other people and other things for what happens or doesn't happen in our life. And I know one of the things I talk to my son about all the time, and even have started talking to my 6-year-old daughter about, is a victim's mindset, blaming other people and other things, or what we call it at the program and Team Kapitulik's house, is a warrior's mindset. And a warrior's mindset is, I take 100% responsibility for everything that happens or fails to happen. And making sure that we understand that taking responsibility may not mean that you're at fault or to blame. In fact, sometimes you're not at all.
Right.
But you still take 100% responsibility, because if you take 100% responsibility, then you have agency, right? You You own it. You can affect something. And as you're talking about that as a team, it makes me think of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. It happens every day. It doesn't end. You're going to have stuff out and you're going to, you know, whatever, your dry cleaning's not ready. You spill your coffee. I don't know. There's all little things that add up and it's just part of life. And I just think a big reason we won this year is we embrace the grind and we attack adversity.
Coach, then last question. What question haven't I asked you today that would get at the root of your organization's success? And by the way, your organization, maybe as a father, as a husband, as a head coach, whatever the team might be, any parting thoughts you would give to other coaches, business leaders out there listening?
I don't know. I think we covered most of the stuff. I do think if you're just looking at our, you know, why we won a national championship this year, like there's so many things, but I do think, one of the more important things was losing to Colgate in the playoffs and not winning. Like, so we had six trophies to win this year, whether it was in-season tournaments, regular season championship, playoff tournament, regional tournament, and then the national championship. We won 5 out of 6, which is crazy. I heard my captains, they were talking about all year, we're going to win 6 trophies. And I'm thinking, God, if we get 3 or 4, that's great, you know? And we got 5 out of 6. And the one we didn't get, we played poorly against Colgate. They played well, I give them credit. We were better than them. Their goalie played great. And we just struggled and struggled and we couldn't reset and we couldn't get out of our own way. But anyway, that failure of that game kind of reset our team. And I think was an impetus for us winning a national championship. I would probably finish on that. I think sometimes there's so much you can gain from failure. You always learn, like when you're studying business models and different things. What's the guy's name? I always think of this. I don't know. It popped in my head. Dyson, the vacuum cleaner guy. You know, okay. Has all the vacuum, right? What's his first? I can't remember his first name, but okay. I read a thing on him once and his Dyson vacuum cleaner that revolutionized vacuum cleaners and made him a billionaire. It was like I'm going to be wrong on the number, but like his 611th prototype. 589. I don't know what, you can look it up. I might be off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always remember that story and I'm like, oh my God, that guy did 611 times. He kept, all right, let's fix it again. Let's fix it. You know, and a lot of them were good, but it wasn't good enough. And he kept going back to the drawing board. And I love that. I don't know why that just popped in my head, but like you
can't
from failure. And he didn't fail once. He failed a lot, you know, and you some of the stuff on Elon Musk, how many times he failed with things he's tried. And, but you know, there's a lot of things to learn. And I think people that when failure happens, they look at it as a teachable moment, as opposed to, you know, woe is me moment. I think those are the ones that are successful in life.
Awesome.
Thanks.
The
program. I don't know where the vacuum cleaner thing came out of my head, but
no, it's awesome. Like,
what is this guy talking about? I want to talk national championship, and he's talking the Dyson vacuum cleaner.
Hey, coach, it's this whole Thomas Edison thing. Very similar story, right? People would ask him, "Oh my God, how'd you deal with 10,000 failures before you figured out the light bulb?" And he said, "I didn't fail 10,000 times. I learned 10,000 times." Right, so. Yeah. Anyway, that was awesome. Yeah. Coach, the program and this podcast mission is to develop great teammates and leaders to create world-class teams. Today, mission accomplished. Thank you so much for joining us today, Coach.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It was fun.
For our audience, our book, The Program, Lessons from Elite Military Units for Creating and Sustaining High-Performance Leaders and Teams, can be found at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and at theprogram.org. To sign up to receive our monthly letter on leadership or to learn more about the program and our leadership development and team building services for your own team, please go to theprogram.org. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at theprogram.org and on LinkedIn at the-program-llc. Finally, if you have enjoyed today's program podcast, please leave a review of it on whatever platform you have accessed it from. Thank you, and attack.